Hi. Dave here. We recorded this episode at short notice and very much on the fly, so please forgive the audio quality and fire alarm. We hope you enjoy the interview.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Laps Gamer Radio. Tonight is a very special episode as we are just mere hours after the release of Ogre by Auroch Digital Games. It is based on the Steve Jackson Ogre tabletop game. And tonight we are joined by a very special guest in Peter Willington from Auroch Digital Games. Good evening, Peter.
Yes. Hello, hello. You say special. Do you mean tired? I think that's quite right. Absolutely.
So, first of all, congratulations on the release of the game.
Thank you very much.
How is it doing so far? I know it's only been a couple of hours.
It's doing very well. So, yes, as you say, it's now, 4.5 hours after we released the game on Steam, and that is a heck of a thing. I am so proud of anybody who can release a game on Steam whatsoever, especially my team, obviously. It's doing well. Basically, in terms of like raw metrics of how things are selling and that kind of stuff, that really only gets updated, you know. I think probably have more data in like a few hours, basically. Mm-hmm. Steam doesn't really update immediately, but the update, the sort of pickup has been really fantastic. So obviously I've been the marketing manager on this project, and working in tandem with the producer on it, Nina Adams. Mm-hmm. We were kind of discussing this and how well do we think this is going to do? And we sort of discussed and we thought, okay, well, we think, you know, Ogre, it's a great game. But it's a game that is 40 years old now. It's got a very hardcore community and like people have heard of it. But not necessarily everybody's played it. And Steve Jackson, people have heard of Steve Jackson, obviously, you know, guy who made Munchkin and Illuminati and GURPS and all that great stuff. But they might not necessarily have played Ogre. And the response has just been absolutely phenomenal. So we're currently sat on, I'm looking at a browser right now. We are currently on, in the new and trending on Steam, we are currently number 2, just below a lovely looking VR game called Raw Data. I should check that out, actually. And the new Total War. In between those two, sandwiched quite nicely between those two. So number 2 is good. Just to get onto that chart is amazing, because basically, so there's like 15, 20 games released every day on Steam?
At least, yeah. I think I got a newsletter that I'm subscribed to, which basically gives a digest of all the games that were released sort of over the last week, and that came in yesterday, and there was 185 games released over the last week on Steam.
Looking at the list, I mean, not only to be second, which is, you know, really well done, but also to be top of Total War Warhammer 2. And I've just seen that even further down is Cuphead, which I know seems to possibly be a cult classic in the in the pipeline. And for that to be a lot further down and your game to be number top, you must be extremely proud of that.
Oh yeah, no, I'm extremely pleased. I'm like super proud of the team and what's been produced. And I mean, obviously, like we're absolutely thrilled, and it's just amazing to be up with the likes of, you know, our colleagues over at Creative who work on that, because, you know, it's amazing. Like, you know, there's always this kind of through line sometimes of like video games companies competing with one another, but I'm sure that, you know, if somebody over there is looking at the Steam right now, I'm sure they'll be thrilled for us as well, you know. So there's, it is really great to be up there, and yeah, we're really pleased. But all of this comes through a lot of hard work, not taking out of the equation all the really easy stuff like coding it and art and design and all of that. All that easy stuff, obviously. Joking aside, like the task of having running a you know, a marketing campaign and a community campaign. So I do that with my, again, my colleague, Jake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to have somebody who I can go, cool, you chat with the community, because it's really the Steve Jackson Games community that has helped this happen.
Yeah.
So like the way that we've kind of structured a big chunk of this marketing campaign is, you know, we knew that there's like such a great fan base there and that they're really committed to this game. Because obviously if you've been playing the game for 40 years, right? Like if you've been playing one single game for 40 years, you're pretty into it and you're probably pretty invested and you want something to do well. And we knew that we could count on that community to really help us and to share the knowledge and like spread the word and give us good feedback and talk to us and that kind of thing. And it's that community, that really positive vibe that's really just helped in like push this to a wider audience. We've been able to say to, you know, really big outlets saying like, look at this super hardcore audience that really likes this video, this tabletop game. We're doing this digital version of it. Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
And being able to generate that coverage has really helped.
Is there a lot of pressure on yourselves because of the fan base behind the original concept of the board game? Is there a lot of pressure? Did you feel that pressure?
Yeah.
Putting that into the video game, because obviously it's a bit different if you're just creating a video game off your own back and people can say, I like this, I don't like that. But if you get something quite fundamentally wrong with a aspect of the board game, obviously the hardcore fans, as we're known to be, can be quite brutal. Was that a lot of pressure for yourselves?
Yeah. So we were basically, before we went into this project, before we announced it, the conversation that we were having was very much around, sorry, I'm just looking outside of my door to find out that apparently the fire alarm is going off. See, this is the kind of, your listeners will now be able to tell, they're like, is this all staged? Did we do this afterwards? No, there's a massive fire alarm going off. Okay, no, that's good. We're not burning to death. Are we burning to death? No. Good. So,
it's the sales figure alarm.
yeah, absolutely. We need one of those. So, before we announced this project, we were working with Steve Jackson Games very closely, especially the Ogre team over there. And the question was basically, what kind of game is this? And we were given this MO of, I want something to look to play like Ogre as far as you can make it play like Ogre, because Mr. Jackson was very aware that they don't really do video games. They know that we're the ones that do video games, and therefore they were very happy to go, okay, if this doesn't work, then that's fine. We don't have to include this kind of gameplay from the original tabletop version in this one. But we made the decision very early on that we didn't want to make a game that looked like Ogre. We wanted to make and because of that, that fan community got on board, because what we weren't doing is saying, hey, this, you know, Ogre Mark V that is this massively iconic, object that you've been interested in for 40 years. We're not going to give you a hex-based game with all of these dice rolls and all this complexity and strategy and tactical stuff that you want. You know, we're going to make you a match three card game. Like, you know, that would have been a much harder sell. So the first of all, obviously, you know, hopefully we got everybody on side at that point. And then you're right, there is that pressure, but it's the pressure coming from people who are like, so we had a lot of beta testers, and one of the mechanics in the game is super, super complicated. But basically, it's something that has this edge case scenario where certain types of units versus different types of units, showing that is very difficult, or having the mechanics of that play out is very, very difficult. And it wasn't in the beta because we wanted to get the beta out and we'd get it tested and all that kind of stuff. And they found it. They found that it wasn't in there. And it's this thing that, you know, if you just had a passing interest in Ogre, maybe you wouldn't notice. But they were able to go, like, you know, hey, hold on a second, this isn't in here, this is not Ogre. And we were like, cool, okay. We now, you know, we know that this is coming in, we're going to add it in later. But being able to be picked up on that stuff, you know, there's no better audience to say, hey, this isn't playing quite right than people who've been playing the game for, you know, almost half a century.
Yeah, I suppose it's, I guess, easier for yourselves in a way that obviously you've got a lot of hype and stuff to live up to with the original game. But then if you've got people that have played this game for years and you go, can you just give this build a go? Let us know what's missing. And they go, yeah, this, and this.
Yeah.
They can be very specific about that. Whereas with other games, it's like you could almost turn around and go, well, that's how the game's designed. So
absolutely.
Led by the community, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And like one of the great things for us was, well, we know that the mechanics here are fun, right? Because they wouldn't have survived that long if they weren't.
Yeah.
So we knew that that was fun. So we didn't end up going to beta testers going, is this fun? Because it's like, what is the definition of that? Like everybody like has a very different opinion on what that should be and what that game should be. But we were able to go back and say, you know, is this ogre? And they were able to say, yes, it is. Or no, this specific point isn't. So you need to work on this area. And obviously we've had, we've had feedback of things like, you know, your Windows only, maybe like it on Mac, maybe a Linux. Like some people have been saying we'd like it on console, on Android and stuff like that. And we made the conscious decision to launch on Windows first and then, you know, and see how well it does. But having that kind of feedback of, hey, I've got a Mac, like that is the kind of business information that we need. Because if a bunch of people were like, yeah, no, like, you know, if everyone was just like, if nobody was asking for that, then we wouldn't even consider going out onto Mac. But now obviously it's it seems like there is an audience for this. So is this a consideration? And obviously that's something that we'll decide a little bit further on down the line. But having that feedback is just,
is there a lot of work to develop a game or to change aspects of the game for it to work on a Mac? Cause I know a lot of games, they're not necessarily put onto Macs.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of development work to be done?
There can be. It really depends on, a lot of different factors, but with our game specifically, the multiplayer is fine because we're just running through Steam. And we're not using our own servers, but that can cause issues if you go to Mac, because you obviously have to make PCs and Macs play nicely together. And, those poor people over at, Firaxis have tried to make Civ 6 work between the two for, you know, ages. And so you know, even with huge budgets like that, it can be a challenge. So for us that's fine. There are often shaders that, you know, basically ways that the objects in the game get rendered. They can break by just simply going to Mac, because then they're not built for those rendering that piece of rendering software. But the main thing from our side of things is, as soon as you release on a game to the public, before all of that, you need to test that release. And so you test, and you have to test on the platform that you are releasing on, right? Yep. So if you're releasing on Windows, you have somebody who has sat there, or many people who have sat there testing. Yes, this is clean. Cool. It goes out the door. You have to do that same amount of testing for each platform you're on. Yeah. So if you release on Windows and Mac simultaneously, you have to double the amount of testers you have. You also have to make sure that the fix that you do for Windows, A, fixes it for Mac, and B, doesn't break anything on Mac. So, and again, this multiplies out. So Linux, it's the same with Android. It's the same with iOS, console, all that sort of thing. So a lot of indie developers tend to go down the route of, okay, release on Windows, and then when it's rock solid, stable, and lovely, and we're all absolutely glad that this is where it's at, and you know there are only minor bugs that are basically just, you're always going to end up with bugs, like always, and how big they are and how small they are is up to the development team, but you will always have small bugs in the game months and months and months and months after release, you know, even if they're just small things. So when we get to a point where we're like, you know what, this is rock solid, this is great, there's, you know, we are really, really at a point where you know, we are at the stage where we have only these tiny little bugs, that's the point that we go, cool, where else do we go? So that's that kind of a business decision. It's not a case of, you know, it's not necessarily a case of this is super difficult to put together for us. It's more a case of where are our priorities, and the priorities obviously on PC for game players is Windows. So yeah, so that's kind of the reality of it, unfortunately. But as I say, Mac is definitely something that we would like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah,
we were just at Eurogamer.
Lucky you, I think. Was it good?
Really good. One thing that did surprise us was the amount of developers that were developing for the Switch.
Mm.
And we were quite blown away with that. Do you have any thoughts about putting this on the Switch?
On the Switch. Yeah, sure. Basically, it's all about going to where the audience is, right?
Yeah.
So if we tomorrow get, 20,000 people say, "Oh, this is fantastic. This is an amazing game. I've paid loads of money for it. You know what? This would be great on my Switch." You know, at that point you go, "Awesome." you also then start to reconsider, your long-held beliefs that strategy games don't often fly very well on console.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go to where the players are, right? It's like,
sure.
On PS4, you can absolutely go and download today a Clash of Clans-esque battle game. They're, mm-hmm. Like one of those games exists on PS4, but I can tell you right now that most players aren't, if you boot up your PS4, you're not thinking, "Oh, you know what I want? A Clash of Clans clone. That's what I want my PlayStation 4 pumping out." Now, that's not to say there aren't strategy fans on console. XCOM proved that there are.
Yeah.
And Civ Rev certainly did as well. But there certainly aren't the number that are on PC. And in fact, there aren't the number that are on touchscreens.
Mm. I think the Rabbids game might be slightly changing that.
No, 100%. Yeah. But again, it's a case of it feels like it is the exception that proves the rule. It's like XCOM... Yeah. Rabbids. Actually, funny story. Like, we were months before we announced when we were going to release. It was my job to present to the rest of the team. Okay, this is when I think we're going to release, and we ended up going obviously with it October 5th. And the reason we chose October 5th, and we had this was such a bizarre sentence to say to one another, was we have to release early October because we have to miss Total Warhammer. Obviously, don't want to compete with those guys.
Yep.
But also, we have to make sure that we don't compete with the Mario and Rabbids strategy game. You've got to remember, like, that thing only really got announced and shown at E3. And, like, we were like, "What the f*** is this?" Like, we were sat there watching the E3 trailer, like, why so we did also have to avoid that, but yes, it's again, if there are more people playing strategy games, that is great.
Mm-hmm.
And it does definitely improve the chances of those games going to consoles.
Yeah. Going into the sort of marketing side and things like that, you'd mentioned about having an awful lot of community engagement then, obviously, with the tabletop fans and things like that. Obviously, having a sort of a built-in fan base there certainly helped with the decision. Definitely. And what have you to produce the game. Did you approach Steve Jackson Games, or did they approach you?
So my boss and friend, Tom Rawlings, he owns the company, Tom is one of the most passionate people that I know when it comes to games, and he loves games, and he wants to make games based on games that he loves, right? So we do a lot of digital adaptations and taking big IPs from the world of board games or just unique IPs and turn them into digital experiences. Tom had his first set of Ogre when he was 9 years old.
Wow.
He is, I think he's mid-40s. I think he'd be all right with me telling you that. He's mid-40s.
we can extrapolate that he is that, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Of course. So he got his first set of Ogre when he was 9 years old. And when he was 9 years old, he started making his own components and pieces for the game. And he actually bought them in yesterday as a this is why we're doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were looking at all these like messed up like tanks. We were like, "That is OP." So we were sort of looking at that stuff, and he was really interested in making a game based on Ogre. Mm-hmm. So he I think he backed the Kickstarter, which was a few years ago, for Ogre, which was the Kickstarter Designer's Edition.
Sixth edition or whatever it was,
Yeah, Designer's Edition, and then it spawned out sixth edition. And like, so he got in touch with Mr. Jackson and basically said, sent this nice email and said, like, this is who we are and this is what we do. And this, you know, we've got Chainsaw Warrior and we're working with our future and, you know, we've done all this other cool stuff. And they'd promised a video game as part of their stretch goals. Mm-hmm. And they weren't going to do it in-house because, you know, they would have had to create a brand new development team to do it. So he was like, well, you know, we're good at this stuff. Like, why don't we, you know, have a conversation about this? And so the conversation was just about, like, well, what kind of game is it and how does this work in terms of, you know, all the boring stuff like finances and all that stuff that I don't have to worry about. thankfully. And basically, yes, they just, you know, their team was like, yeah, you guys and girls just seem like the team to do this. And so through that, you know, like I say, they were just super supportive through the whole thing. You know, we were getting back to them saying, well, we need to automate this one specific area of the game so that we can have a fully asynchronous game. Mm-hmm. And there was a bit of like, okay, well, do we actually need to do that? And we explained why, like, digital players just, you wouldn't want to do the thing that we had to avoid. And they were like, cool. Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. That doesn't sacrifice the game in any way. Like, mm-hmm. let's go for it. So yeah, it was really very much a case of like a sort of mutual respect, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Going forward then, how do you hope to sort of remain in the spotlight then on Steam?
Yeah. So basically, our thing is that we want the Ogre community to fall in love with the game, make sure, you know, they love the game and make sure that it is the game that they want to play for the next, you know, 30 years, mm-hmm. Or however long. And Ogre is a game that has this, that has survived because of its word of mouth. Like, people introduce it to their kids.
Yeah.
Because they're like, look at this awesome tabletop war game. And so we want it to be a case of people who will buy a copy for a friend, mm-hmm. who will then buy it for another friend. And, you know, this asynchronous turn-based multiplayer that we have where basically you can be playing all of your turn and then you play and play and play. And then you can exit Steam if you want. And you will then get a notification outside of Steam that they've done their turn in the online multiplayer. So it's really cool. Like, and it's really underused. Very, very old. It's called Steam Turn Notifications. Basically nobody uses it. and it's great. And we're hoping that that keeps that multiplayer community alive,
yeah.
because we want them to keep coming back every day or every other day and like checking in. Ah, oh, like Barry's moved over here. Fantastic. That's great. Oh, this is how I'm going to respond. And we want to keep it in their mind, you know, in their minds so that they're like, you know, who would love this? You know, Gavin from work. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Let's get a copy for Gavin. So that's kind of how we want to keep the long tail of the game going. We're also, planning a bunch of cool community stuff. Like one of the things that we really want to do, we're not really announced this, but that's fine. What we want to do is,
Exclusive,
sure. Is what we really want to do is we want to encourage the community to set up their own tournaments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't see Ogre as an esport or anything like that, but we know that one of the things that Ogre fans really like that bums them out a little bit is that sometimes they are a bit like few and far between in their area.
Absolutely.
So and it's like any miniatures game, right? Like if you haven't got a friend to play against. Like you're kind of stuffed. Yep. And Ogre's great because it's all in the same box. But again, you know, if you don't have a friend who knows the rules, it's a bit of a pain. What we want is to connect all of those people. And we want to make this global Ogre network where they're playing the game online and, you know, making friends and doing all that sort of stuff. We want to encourage in the very near future, tournament play where we can get the communities, where we can basically say to the community, okay, here is this third-party piece of software that we've got that we know about. You know, I don't know where we would set it up, but this third-party piece of software. Here's how you would run an Ogre tournament. You go. You set this up, and if you want to put these cool games together, go for it. So we can keep it in their mind space that way, and push on the community in that way. The other thing is we are very fortunate in that the review keys only went out today, which was real, like real bummer. It was one of the few things that I think we were all kind of like a little bit like, no, that's a shame. And that's just simply because we found this really late game problem that we really just wanted to fix before we sent it to press. So hopefully some nice people will review it later on down the line, and hopefully that will give us another spike and more interest. And so we kind of hopefully will have like, you know, a good week or so would be really good there. And hopefully that should generate enough interest. And then of course there's like long-term business decisions that can get made around how we do stuff with Ogre. Like, you know, Christmas is coming up, so there will be a Steam sale, I am sure. We definitely see this as a game that we don't really want to like deep discount or anything like that, because it's just,
well, especially if it's like, just out and what have you.
Absolutely, like this is not a thing that we would be doing for ages, but in terms of the genuine truthful business video game decisions, it's like when you have a game out, you know, the next year you might think, do you know what, you know, we've probably got as much money at, you know, this price point, so therefore, okay, like if we reduce it by 20%, what does that do? And that's with every game, like that's just the nature of things. But yeah, that's definitely not something that we'd be doing in the near future, because obviously we want to make sure that the people who actually purchased it, you know, day one, they really get that, rinse it for the value that they've got.
Well, the good thing about Steam is that if games and what have you do appear on sort of the popular charts or the new releases and things like that, people at least do wishlist it to sort of keep an eye on it and things like that. Mm. And okay, whenever the Steam sales come around, then yes, you sort of get a nice little spike, but at least it'll be there on their wishlist. For some time in the future, if they get like a voucher or whatever and things like that.
Well, actually, wishlisting was one of our marketing thrusts, essentially. So, Valve are a very, very smart bunch, and they look at data. Like when they are deciding who they are going to be shouting about, they look at the data of the game, and obviously, nobody knows what Valve's metric actually is.
Yeah.
Because it would obviously get gamed. But one of our marketing thrusts was, we are going to get people to wishlist this. Because if we can prove to Valve, look, these people actually care. Like, you know, this really intense community, they've wishlisted it. These are people who want to go and buy the game. Again, like pushing into that and saying, you know, this is the number of wishlists that we've got. You know, we are making this effort to do this. That's the kind of thing that can encourage a platform holder, any platform holder, not just Steam. Mm-hmm. Any platform to really consider a game, because that's what platform, I think that's the thing that people always forget. Platform holders don't want to do all of the marketing for the video game.
Yeah, of course they
right, like it makes sense, but it, like for a lot of independent developers, they kind of think, I'll just release a game and Valve will push it. And it's like, no, like there's like 25 games coming out that day. what they want is for you to go away and go and talk to GamesRadar and get a piece there. And they want to talk to get you to get a piece on Rock Paper Shotgun. And, you know, they want you to go on, you know, Laps Gamer Radio and have a lovely interview there. Like that's what they want. And they want to see that stuff, because that shows that the studio is actually making a commitment to marketing the game themselves. And therefore they can accentuate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen developers, what have you, use social media so much more now. And in reality, their marketing campaigns for their games probably start not long after they actually start the development of the game, or, you know, at least sort of maybe halfway through, 6 months or whatever away from release date. And it's just the little updates and things that they do on Twitter and things to say, you know, I'm currently working on this and what have you. Obviously, there's a lot of game developers and what have you who want to try and keep everything as quiet as possible. But for the people who just want to try and get the engagement and build up the fan base and what have you ready for the release date, social media has obviously become a massive tool for them.
Yeah, definitely. Like it's huge for us. Like one of the you know, best bits of traction that we're getting at the moment is we're currently the number three post on Reddit in the board game section. So it's got about 400,000 subscribers to this, just this one subreddit. And we are currently like number two there with this post that Tom put out, which was basically, when I was 9, I played this game. Here is a picture of me playing it. And, you know, and here is the game that I've now made, you know, 30 odd years later. The traction that we've got through that post, like linking back through to Steam, people go, oh, that sounds fantastic. Oh, I'll definitely go and check your game out on Steam. Like it's like social media is just so valuable to us. And again, all of this builds into, you know, if Steam, if Humble, if Green Man Gaming, whoever, if they are seeing people who are linking through to their store, then they are going, ooh, okay, this is interesting. Clearly there is an audience here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about Auroch Digital, just in general, because obviously you've been around since 2010 and have worked on quite a few games since then.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started off life as a sort of consultancy firm. This is long before I joined the company.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of talking about how big companies can get into games. Then the studio started making really, really small games. So, worked with, BBC, Wired. Did we do something with Al Jazeera? I can't remember. Maybe we didn't. Cut that out. we worked with Wellcome Trust and, big, like brands that weren't necessarily into games, and helping them figure out how games work and maybe making some games for them. So Wired, for example, we had made six games in 6 weeks based on six news stories.
Right.
Okay. So that was part of our Game the News initiative. Then Auroch decided to move more into digital adaptations of games. Chainsaw Warrior was our big sort of commercial, here is a video game release that wasn't something like Nakagera or Endgame Syria, which were our two news games. So like Chainsaw Warrior was like this big commercial release. We followed it up with a sort of pseudo sequel called Lords of the Night. And then from there, we worked on our own IP, Last Days of Old Earth, which is a turn-based strategy game. You can see a theme here, strategy, board games. Started working on Dark Future, which is one of our, is still in development, very much in development. I'm looking at the screen of somebody who's left their screen on one of the screenshots at the moment, and it is looking dope. yes, but we've kind of gone quiet on that recently just because we wanted to kind of squirrel away and do something fancy pants. Yeah. And we are, helped our friends at Endemic bring Plague Inc. Evolved to PC. We did all that good stuff, and we are currently working on other titles that are, you know, you can figure out what sort of stuff, like that kind of strategy, board gamey, that kind of area. So we kind of moved into making these video games, as I say, and we work on a mix of what we call sort of like future tabletop, like digital tabletop adaptations, ways that we can sort of represent a board game, but it's not a board game, like a board game-ish experience as a video game. We're very interested in like VR and mixed reality and strategy and that kind of thing. And we work with big IP owners. So we work with Games Workshop and Steve Jackson Games, obviously. And we are working with somebody very, very exciting who I can't tell you about, but we'll probably announce it in about 6 months' time, and working on something very cool in that regard. And we also work on own IP. So Last Days was not attached to a property or anything like that. Okay. And we also have another own IP title. Own IP tends to be more of a risk because it's like, here's Ogre. And it's like a really easy sell.
Yeah.
Like, cause it's like, this is what the game is. And it's like, you know, Ogre. Whereas it's like, here's, you know, Little Jimmy Big Nuts, the platformer, like nobody knows what, you know, why they should care about that character and not, you know, Mickey or something. So that's kind of the mix that we do. And that's definitely the mix that we're continuing to pursue.
With the tabletop turning those into an actual video game, is that kind of a niche you've seen in the market? Because obviously I play tabletop and I play video games.
Oh, good.
And sometimes picking up, so I picked up Carcassonne on digital, just because it's a little bit, I'm a little bit conflicted as to whether I want to play tabletop games digitally.
Sure.
And a few of my mates frown upon it, but sometimes it's just easier.
Right.
But also, for me personally, it's getting used to the rules.
Mm.
So it's a good way to kind of get a foot into the game, and then if you have got the time to do...
Yeah.
tabletop.
Yeah, 100%. I've talked about this a bunch of my own silly, dumb little podcast, but like, I really got into, and I'm still very much into, a fantastic card game called Star Realms. And that started off life as a physical game, and it made the transition over to a mobile tablet PC game. And I love playing the physical game. It's great. I sit there with my partner and sling some explorers at one another, and that's great. But me and my friends who are in different parts of the country, you know, we'll play Star Realms like, you know, every other day. We'll check in with each other playing that game. I don't want to be disparaging to any other developer because making games is hard, but it's very easy to make a straightforward port of a board game that doesn't work on digital. Like there are 100,000 chess games, right?
Yep.
And like, they are all the same. And none of them feel very different to one another, and they are just chess. So it's like, what is this? The best games of chess are games where they've gone, cool, we know that chess is a good game, but how do we make it interesting in a digital space? And there's been some really great improvements in how chess games get made. So I think it's called Chess Ultra or something like that. You have a VR chess game where you can sit and look at one another in a room playing chess halfway across the world. Like, that is a thing that only video games can do for board games, right? Yeah. I think the bad board game adaptations that go to video games are adaptations where they've just not considered the medium that they're working in, right? Mm. Yeah. So I think that's exactly the same problem that plagues any developer of anything, where they're taking one medium and pushing it into another. Like, you know, late 90s, early noughties, licensed video games were all garbage, right? Like, you had that great era in the 90s where you had like Virgin and Disney teaming up and making The Lion King for Mega Drive, and it was amazing. Yeah. Yeah. DuckTales on the NES, oh my word, incredible. And then they got lazy. People got lazy. And like, they didn't think about the adaptation of, they didn't think about, like, on the Commodore 64, I think this is right. There's a Commodore 64 version of Auf Wiedersehen Pet, right? Like,
really?
Like, oh yeah, I believe so, right? And it's like, why? Like, there's nothing about that medium, that format of that show that translates into a video game, right?
No.
So why would you bother? So I think it's the same with board games and films and comic books. Yeah. If you don't actually take what it is that is the essence of that game and see whether or not it actually works in a digital space, like, I think you've already messed it up, you know? Yes, I agree with you. Like, there are some board game adaptations that you look at and you're just like, why have you done this? And then there are some where you're just like Star Realms, and I really liked 8-Minute Empire. Mm-hmm. I think the, Civilization. Civilization, Europa Universalis 4. Like, Europa Universalis, I don't know if you've ever played the tabletop version of that, but I haven't, because I have not got 24 hours to play a tabletop game, right?
Yeah.
But like, as soon as you take that, you can just take all the mechanics and put it into a space that's just the size of a monitor, and it's not the size of three massive dinner tables. And that's what makes that digital adaptation brings to that fantastic strategy game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a Space Hulk on the PC as well.
It
takes the mechanics of it and what have you, but obviously it brings the gene stealers and everything to life. They're in front of you and what have you, which obviously it just makes it a lot more interactive, and it puts a lot more sort of fear or anticipation into the gameplay of that.
Yeah, definitely.
No, that has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much, Peter, for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's quite right. Yeah. We will give you a chance to do any shout outs and what have you, obviously plug Ogre and what have you, so go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sure. Well, there is a video game. It is called Ogre. And it is 10 out of 10, best video game ever. Please go and purchase it. It's available on Steam right now for Windows PCs. And it's very inexpensive, well worth all of your money. So you can do that. Basically, if you're putting this out in time, go and sign up for the Auroch Digital newsletter, and we will send you some free Steam soundtrack DLC thing. Ooh. For it. It's some fancy pants marketing thing that some idiot put together. that would be me. So yes, put all that together. So basically, and we'll give you a tiny little free piece of a DLC if you do that. And then if you want to come follow me, then I'm on twitter.com/000, spelt with a podcast friendly X. And you can find my podcast on iTunes on Staying In, because my friends will not forgive me if I don't push the podcast that we do. Thank you ever so much for having me on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope I've not been sort of like, I've not had a Fanta fueled splurge all over this and just sort of like talk.
But no, it's been very entertaining. So
good, excellent.
I dare say we will try and get you on at another stage and possibly have a little more chilled talk just generally about games and things and what have you. But yeah, no, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on, Peter.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.